All right, with Nate Lewinsky, a winning one-page screenplay writer, we just had a 15-minute conversation before we press record about the Buffalo Bills. And this is not the audience for the Buffalo Bills usually, but basically we're both from the area, we're both fanatical fans, and we just had we've never met, right? You and I never met until we, yeah.
Never.
And we just had this philosophical conversation about our team, and we wanted them to win the Super Bowl in a nutshell, I guess, right?
That is true, and maybe we can have another talk about a project that relates to it, or when that Super Bowl happens and we're burning the city down.
Do you have a project that
I
relates to it?
like I had intimated it to you. I've had a couple ideas, and I did have this band I work with a lot, Handsome Jack out of Lockport, New York. They and Buffalo really. They had a song on their recent album that I wanted to write a Bills, Buffalo Bills sort of related music video concept, but it just never got off the ground. And I also felt that the market for Bills related media was a little oversaturated. So I was like, ah, this isn't going to be the best for it. We pivoted into something else.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a good idea, right? So then, but then sometimes things get dated. It's like the Red Sox in 2003, where all those books came out and like, oh, the curse, blah, blah, blah. And then they won the next year. And then all those books and all those stories and all those films kind of like didn't mean anything because they won, they broke the curse, right? So it's like with the Bills, it's like if we like as soon as we win the Super Bowl, we're gonna win a Super Bowl, everything, all the narrative changes, right? So
Yeah, and it would kind of it doesn't transcend time as much, although there was a lot of detail to the concept. I wrote the whole thing out, and it was stuff about the history of the team in it, and this idea of a fan who lived through all the years that you and I have lived through, and this idea that they sort of feed off of the tragic nature of the team as opposed to even wanting them to win. Everyone else would be sorrowful, and he's like, all right, we lost right at the last second.
Oh, the psychology of it. Yeah, that's the psychology of
Yeah.
the fan. Yeah, that's a new spin. That's a unique spin.
Right, that's what I thought. Tough Love was the name of the song, so it was about needing tough love to get like to get your kicks or to get your day going and this types of things. So whatever, that didn't happen. And
It's like the, but it's like the depress. Like if a Buffalo Bills fan was just one person, it'd be like the depressive person. Poor me. Look at me. I'm feeling sorry for myself. And not to be down on those that personality, but it's like,
sure.
but there's like that kind of like wet blanket. Like, oh, I'm poor. Look how sad I am. It's like, do you want to be successful or do you just want to
Sure.
be like it's self-pity, I guess, right? The
Yeah,
self-pity fan.
and t I guess we're almost going back to where we started before with the Bills talk, but this idea, that tragic idea, but also, it has made some of the most memorable moments in sports. Every year we have, I mean, we're always on the losing end, it seems, but these games that deserve a name, even, like they're not just a game that was on
13
Sunday or Monday night.
seconds. Music
Yeah,
City Miracle, right?
right.
Yeah,
Yeah,
wide
wide
right.
right. It's great. How many teams, it stinks for a part of it every time, but well, that is what it is. Now I will say, and I guess get us back on track a little bit. Now I submitted this screenplay under, I guess, my real name, which is Nate Lewinsky or Nathan Lewinsky. However, I sort of like changed, I don't know why, and I sort of just ran with it. And with the band Handsome Jack, I make videos under the moniker Nate Chateau, Chateauex. And I also act in the theater, and I actually act in some of their videos as well. So I kind of made that decision to have this sort of stage name or professional name. It hasn't amounted to what I would have liked. I haven't gotten over the hump yet professionally, but I just wanted to put that out there because I did submit it under the different name, and I was like, well, and now that this is happening, I was like, well, people can find, my work this other way, I guess.
Yeah, to send we'll send me a link and we can add to the podcast. So okay, so this film, this one, we do a lot of one-page scripts. This is one that stands out, very well written. First of all, you wrote it the day that you got the notice, I guess, right? You saw the notice and you wrote it that day.
Yeah, I had submitted to Wild Sound recently, and I didn't get the film I submitted, I didn't get picked or whatever. And so I got it through the email and I said, oh, one page screenplay and you know people will read it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. What do I got that I can fit into one page? Because that is a it's a hard challenge. And I don't know if anyone has a one page screenplay lying around. I know that about 20 years ago, I remember David Lynch did one. They did this like Lumiere Brothers. It was like a 100th anniversary for the Lumiere Brothers. So a bunch of directors were chosen to make these like 100 second or like just over 1 minute or between 1 and 2 minute little short films. And they're pretty interesting at the time. But anyway, so to even do that, I don't think a lot of people have that in their bag, you know, right in their back pocket, a one page screenplay, beginning, middle, and end. And I was like, well, what do I got? What can I just put out there? So I took this true story from my life and I said, okay, well, I know this so well. Can I make it into this one page screenplay? And it even, it, you know, I did do it that day, but it still took me a, you know, I had to whittle that down and, you know, 'cause, you know, you just get one word onto the next page and, well, I gotta fit this dial, you know, how tight can I make the description? How, you know, how direct can I be? And it was a great challenge. I loved it.
And then so, but it's based on a true story and it's very traumatic for you, I guess, right?
And it's a story that I've been thinking about different ways to tell, you know, whether it's just with regular narrative prose or, you know, screenplays kind of, you know, screenwriting ever since I started doing, which was about the time that the story takes place. The story took place in 2003. You know, I had started film school in New York, the New York Film Academy in Manhattan, with a 12-week screenwriting course. And even before then, I knew that screenwriting, that was the in, because when you know, every movie needs the writing, you know, that's the blueprint. So to me, that was like, okay, well, I always have these ideas. That's going to be the most important thing. And that's going to be my inroad. You know, that was my thought at the time. And I like the writing style. You know, it's almost kind of hard for me to think of writing regular, like a novel or anything else. Because I just sort of like, you know, I like the present tense nature of screenwriting. I like the just, you know, just like how the description is and the dialogue. I don't know. I just, you know, that's just kind of how it is for me. And so, yeah, I always wanted to tell this story. I never really could figure out just the way to do it. And this gave me an opportunity to at least tell a sliver of it, which was kind of that pivotal moment in this true story. And it's called The Answer. Which you know is probably in the description, and it's about when you know when I was in film school in New York, I was right about to make my final film for what was the 1 year filmmaking program at New York Film Academy, and it was really an intensive program. You're really going to school full time, and not full time like 12 credit hours. I mean, it was like every day, and it was what you made out of it. I was a blue collar kid from Buffalo. My dad kind of, and I found out after, gave me all he could give me, and then some, to get me in this place where really it was me and a bunch of really wealthy kids from all over the world in this place. And the year went on, and I found myself to be the most kind of motivated and ambitious of the group. And you know, there was other kids I thought were talented, but it just seemed like they were a little lackadaisical at times, and you know, whatever. And so I was really gunning for this very elaborate final film that we were going to be shooting in the Hamptons, mostly. And I had all these actors set up, and it was going to be about $5,000, and which was actually peanuts to what a lot of my teachers and professors, they were telling me, like, you know, if you go to Columbia or NYU, he's like, oh man, the amount of money people spend on their final film is like crazy. You know, their thesis film, sometimes it's over 30,000, and you know, yada yada. So I had seen the production that morning. I called my dad earlier before I had this meeting with the production teacher, and I was like, Dad, you know, this money's not in the bank. You know, we have all this stuff waiting. I had, you know, I had people, you know, vans, hotels booked. It was a whole thing. And I'm like, I gotta go. I'm like, go check, 'cause I can't do anything until this happens. And then I went, I was this apartment in Soho is where we were living. My wife and I got married. I eloped with her the fall before, and then she followed me into New York. And so, and she was at work when this all went down, I went to Union Square where the school was. I met the teacher, and my dad, when I was on the phone with him, he's like, "Oh yeah, I'll go check." He's like, I don't know what happened. You know, he made it seem like he had no idea. And then when I came home, he just never he wasn't answering the phone. He would just, you know, just go to the answering machine. I was like, shit, what am I gonna do? I was just kind of stuck in this weird limbo. And at the time, you know, his name is blanking me, but you know, Requiem for a Dream was a movie that I had watched
Aronofsky.
A bunch of times. Yeah, Aronofsky, right? Yeah. So I had watched that a bunch since it had come out. I think in 99 or 2000 it came out, and it was 2003, June 2003. And we had, you know, it was a movie that inspired me. I was like, wow, look at this. It was so fucking harsh movie. And it was so, and I watched all how they made it. It was, you know, all the stuff about it. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to turn all the lights off. And we lived in this studio that had no light, you know, the windows just face the brick wall. So if you turn the lights off and shut the shit, I mean, it was like pitch black. So I sat there, I watched this movie, and I was like, wow, I was really invigorated again. I was like, wow, that it really hit me, the movie. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. And I'm like, I really feel ready. So I get fucking, the movie stops. I call my dad back, and that's the script. When I called again, police officer answered the phone, and he's like, who is this? He was like, very like, blunt on the phone, very kind of harsh. And I was like, oh, this is my house. Who the hell are you? And then, my grandmother got on the phone, and she told me my father had passed away, and I didn't know what to do. I just had to hang up the phone with her.
But this
and
is the
I ran out
story, right? Than the one page. The one page is poignant. It's like unbelievable. But can I ask what did, like, so you're at to make this film. So what happened? Did you go straight home?
Oh, I couldn't go straight home because we had no money. So I ran to my wife's work. I told her, you know, I'm crying and we're figuring out. And then this, actually, and I had no money for a bus ticket or anything. And so one of the students, my friend, my closest friend at student, he was a very wealthy kid from South Africa. And we were all under 25. So like to rent a car is very expensive. He paid, you know, we rented a car and drove it all the way back. And, you know, I say in the script that I knew right then that my dad had committed suicide, but really when we were driving away, we took Route 17, and it ended up being, it was dark by then, by the time we finally got all the stuff, got the car rented, all the stuff. And I was in the back of the car, and, you know, I was really like, you know, whatever, all the stuff. And I told my wife and my friend Thomas, I was like, hey, I think my dad killed himself. That's what happened. I'm like, you guys know that's what happened. And they're like, no, that's not what happened. They're like, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. I was like, that has to be. Cause like all the, and I won't get into it now, cause you know, all the detail, everything that led up to it, like, you know, seeing it very clearly, I was like, oh, this is the only answer. And then it ended up being, by the time I finally got home, saw my family, and we were a very, very small family, only, basically just an immediate, you know, five people or whatever, not in the house, but just with my uncle and grandmother and stuff. And, and then that's what happened. And then it took me, like, I ended up making another movie, different movie, that was actually, it was more about this. It was about a man coming home and finding that his wife had committed suicide, and he is in shock, but he doesn't have a lot of time to do anything because his daughter comes home from the bus, his like 8-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And he's got to kind of just like diffuse the situation. And it was about, and that was about how there was just really there's no answers sometimes when it comes to this kind of thing. Now I have, you know, I see how it could happen, the whys and the hows and all that kind of thing. But that short film that I ended up making was about how sometimes there are no answers. That's what the character actually says to the camera at the very end. He's like, sometimes there are no answers. And sometimes there aren't, because, you know, you're that's what you're looking for. You're looking for some sort
of
closure.
So your friend helped you rent the car, and then he drove with you and your wife, you and your wife and the three of you drove.
Yeah. So he got to visit Buffalo and slept on the floor in my basement or with me. Well, it's like a family room.
Do you know him now? Are you still friends with him now? Or?
He had to leave a visa issue, and so when he left, I actually shot the other film, and he was a little bit hurt that I shot my final film without him. And then I actually wanted to pay him back, and I tried getting a hold of him, and he just never, we just lost touch. And he made a movie. I know he made a feature film, and now he owns, his dad's like incredibly wealthy. It's like he showed me a picture of a mountain, and he goes, "Yeah, we own everything around this mountain up until this point, because South Africa owns the top, whatever." And I know his like family had like the royal family go there, and all it was like crazy. But anyway, I lost touch with him, unfortunately, and I know he's out of the filmmaking business now. But yeah, that's.
He's part of the most like most influential moment in your life. It's just interesting. Like, yeah, it happens. People come and go in our lives and stuff like that. Well, there's a story there. Like, that's kind of a incredible that you're looking for the money, and like, that's an incredible story. And I'm sorry that happened. Could I ask your was your mom in the picture or?
She was, I mean, she was, I'm actually adopted, and my mother, and I found this out a little bit more years later. She has a lot of borderline schizophrenia and a lot of these
Mental
other
health
weird health,
issues.
but she actually found him.
Oh, okay.
She found him 'cause he went into the backyard. Like right after I got off the phone with him, he just, he went in the backyard and shot himself. And so she found him after. And then all that was unraveling while I was, really high on my horse, this talking to the producing teacher about all this stuff and how I'm gonna coordinate this movie. And I was really, oh man, I was so gung-ho about it. And I really, I mean, I don't know if the story, I mean, I don't know, it was ambitious. I don't know if the writing of the story was holding up, but what we would have tried to accomplish was gonna be, I don't know, it was gonna be something. And
Your dad knew this was happening in the moment and everything like that.
oh yeah, he knew everything. And actually, you mentioned my mother. I wasn't even really speaking with her. He was actually my only conduit to the family at all. And he had exhausted what I found out later was, this New York Film Academy, they break up this, I think it's a little bit different now, but at the time they had a 1-year film program. You break it up into two semesters, really, and you pay for each one. And he never actually ended up paying the second semester. I'd been going for months without him paying, and he turned his ringers off, and everything was screened through an answering machine that he had in the bot in his closet. And he ran the whole, my mother wouldn't have even known. She didn't get phone calls or anything like that. She was kind of weird. And so they never alerted to me that no one was paying. If in fact, if they would have, I might have been able to call him out on it and been like, "Hey, Dad, what's happening?" Because he had retired that fall. He used his what's called a deferred comp to pay for most of this. I mean, when I went back to the house, he had like the cupboards were bare. There's like no food in the fridge. He had lapsed on all his car payments and my rent in Manhattan. And I remember telling him, I was like, "Dad, because they had ways you could like take out loans and stuff," but he had paid off his house. He didn't want to do any of that. And he just kind of let the candle burn at both ends. And then when it went off, he just kind of stretched it as far as he could. And then once I needed this amount of money, and I was kind of even being, whatever. If this ever gets made into a movie, if I ever get to tell the story fully, I was almost kind of a jerk about it. I was like, where is this
Well, you're
money?
young and this is your dream. Of course you're being a jerk about it. This is like you're a human being. Oh my
Yeah.
God. It's so key. Like he kind of fucked you in a sense, right? Like, and he just basically, then he knew that the end was near. Like, not to beat down your dad. It's just
Oh
that, like,
no, it's fine. Yeah, I was calling. I was like, "Dad, where are you? Like, what is this money?" And then finally, that's when I was like, "Well, I'm just gonna watch this movie." And it's actually a movie. I was like, "I'm not watching it. I'm not watching this movie ever again." And I don't think I ever did watch it again.
Well,
I just can't.
it's a that movie fucked me up because it's like someone with addiction and stuff like that. Like that's a pretty. I only watched it once, and I'll never watch that movie again.
Well,
Requiem
and I
for a
think about
Dream.
him, and it's almost like when I, because that movie, and I'm sure the people that are listening or watching this, it's a movie that I think filmmakers watch. I don't know, some people might think weird about Aronofsky after certain movies, but I still think that, especially at the time, he
Well, the
was
movie's brilliant.
something we all looked to. the movie's brilliant and it was adapted from, you know, written word, all that stuff. But I almost, when I think about the movie, I think about the characters and I feel like my dad is like another, it's like another episode of that same movie. Like it, cause you know, and I always think about it, like, man, he must have been insane. And in fact, my uncle later told me that he visited him within that last month, kind of surprised him. And he felt my dad was like, he said his hair was out. He like there was something the matter with him. He couldn't put his finger on it. So I never really felt like mad at him. Well, I shouldn't say that.
You in hindsight, yeah, because you he's a human being and he was obviously going through stuff. But basically, like, yeah, he tried to like see it through, and then he realized that it was the end. It was the end, right? That
yeah, because maybe. Yeah, because he was getting money. You know, he was retired, so he was, and he worked for the state. He was actually a I hate to say prison guard because he was a little bit more in the you know, he was an officer later, and he worked nights. So he worked nights for 30 years, and he worked. And they always say, actually, they say that. And I talked to a lot of people after this, but a lot of times people who work in corrections, they do commit suicide. It's like it's a higher rate of that. Even though that's not why, but there's something about, like, I don't know, just what you see in there, but then also this,
the psychological elements of it, right? So,
anyway. Yeah, and the timing, the scheduling, and stuff like that.
There's something about being working night. I work nights for a long time. It messes with your head. It's a young man's game.
Yeah, he would. It's weird. He would. Well, I guess he did find some time to sleep there because of the nature of his job. He, after years and years of doing it, he was able to like get a lot of work done for 2 hours. Maybe they'd take a couple naps and stuff. He wasn't like watching anything. He was a little bit different. You know, like I said, an officer, which is basically like a manager or whatever. But anyhow, that is what inspired the one page short. And I don't know. I don't know if
There's a story here, man. There's like, it's like, I don't know, like where you're at, your headspace or filmmaking, but this is an amazing story. And I think it's very universal too. I think it's about family dynamics. It's about being a dad, right? And it's just about, I don't know if you have kids, but basically it's about being a dad. It's the pressures and like being there. I think he tried to be there for you and he ended up not succeeding in the end, right? And I think that you can, there's so many ways to go with it. I don't know his headspace, but basically like, but you're like, you're on top of the world. You're like, you're doing your dream. And then for you, there's two stories going on, right? That then you got, that's crushing. That must've been like, I don't even know how you, like, it must've taken a long time to recover from that. Like in many ways, like your dream got died, not died. You know what I'm saying? Right. And then your dad died too. Like you're mourning two things at the same time.
Oh, so many, more than that. And it was very, it's the pivotal moment of my life. And really, and that's what that script, that is the, you know, everything changed after.
Yeah.
I get that, after I make that phone call and I get that answer.
Yeah.
And everything changed after. And I'm still, oh God, you know, I mean, in a way, I wouldn't say I've tried to quit, but, you know, there's been times I've tried to, like, you know, kind of like the Bills fandom, this urge, this need to tell stories, to I hate to say make movies, people look at it in a silly way, but that this is the art we're given, right? This is the time period we live in. People who are great directors now, they might have been authors 150 years ago. Like, I don't know, you know, like Dostoevsky might have been a film director now. I'm not sure he, you know what I mean? This is like this is the medium. This is where the artists are, the storytelling. And like, I can't help it but keep going. And it's not about like, oh, well, for my dad, like I don't have that kind of, I know people, some people operate like that. But I don't necessarily do it like that, but I can't shake it. And it's, you know, it's still here. And that story is still, you know, it's still brimming, you know, it's still boiling over.
Yeah. That's why you did this one page. It's like, it's still there. It's like, you said you're on a crunch. It's like, oh, what do I have for one page? This is what you went to.
So yeah, what's the story? You know, I know, there's all kinds of axiom, you know, whatever. Write what you know. What's the story that you need to tell? If you had one story to tell, you know, what would it be? You know, because I have all kinds of ideas, and I'm not going to bore anyone with it now. Yeah. Different historical figures and different adaptations and different things that you see in your life. But someone said, hey, you know, I got this, and you're only gonna be able to make one movie or tell one story ever, and this is gonna be the end of it. I'd say, well, this is it. This is the one. And I, you know, I guess I could have waited a little bit longer. I could have submitted this after a few weeks of time and whatever. And he did allow me to make one little small edit, which I thank you for that, which really wasn't a big deal. I think I switched a couple words around because it sounded strange. But anyway, I did that. And I think it, I don't think it's a, so, you had a questionnaire and you had asked, like, you know, why should this movie be made, this script
Yeah,
produced? And I'm
you
not
weren't sure about
sure
it.
that, I don't know if it should be, but I was happy. I mean, even you know, having you read it and you see it and you being able to talk to me now, it's nice to know that maybe that's some sort of motivation or encouragement to look into developing it further.
Yeah, you
I guess
should.
the biggest thing is with all these stories, though, like, especially in a place where I'm at, you know, because I know how hard it is to make a movie. I know that at times I've always been like, maybe I should, you know, get on social media somehow or make a website and just like dare people to produce some of my scripts or some of my ideas. Like, hey, I dare you to try to make this movie. Please steal it. Please go ahead, find the money.
Yeah.
Like, find the team of people. Because even now, when I produce music videos or any of the short films, like, I'm kind of all alone. I'm just like, there's no, I don't have any crew. I don't have anyone. You know, I'm in front of the camera, I'm behind it. You know, maybe I got my wife pressing record, but no one's helping me. And it's so difficult to kind of create that world where it's like, hey, people believe in what you're doing. They believe in the stories you're trying to tell, and they're there saying, yeah, I'm gonna say sacrifice myself, but I'm gonna put in my time because I'm gonna support this work and I'm gonna do it for you because I believe in it that much. I believe in your talent, and vice versa. I would believe in theirs. So I say, yes, you're helping me. You're gonna man this camera. You're gonna help me develop the visual composition the best to tell this story. And I find that difficult. That's why this story here takes place in Manhattan. There's a film school. Yeah, you could adapt it. You could change things. You could make it a little bit different. But there's something very poignant about how it actually was. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's something that'll ever happen, but I'm certainly, I think it could be worthwhile to
100%. On that
look
note,
into it.
let's, I don't know, think about it. Come back to me later on. I think
Okay.
there's an amazing story here, and I appreciate your candor. I really do. It's like you this I this is, like I said, we do a lot of one-page scripts. This one really stood out. There's something very much there, and like just telling the story with your dad, and like that, even that road trip, that's a story, that's a movie right there, right? You know, South African rich kid giving you a car, you're with your wife, it's like, yeah, you're going, dude, I know that every, like that highway, you know, Western New York, right? You got to go through that highway to get from New York to Buffalo. And it's the same state, but they're
Yeah.
like, metaphorically, there's like so the opposite, right? Like
Oh
it's,
yeah, I'm not from New York. I'm a Midwest. This is like the
you know what I'm
Midwest.
saying, right? It's so interesting. Like we're like, you know, like Houston and Dallas is like, it's similar, right? Like, you know what I mean? It's like Cincinnati and, you know, Cleveland, you know, they're similar, but New York City and Buffalo, like, it's like
Oh yeah,
apples,
they couldn't.
like part of that, the New York City pun, it's like apples and oranges, right? Like, it's, they're not the same state, but they are, right? So,
Yeah,
anyways,
of course.
but I'm saying metaphorically, that's what's happening in your headspace, right? You're in thematically, you're in New York City,
Oh.
your family's in Buffalo, right? So, and you have to go to Buffalo, so.
Yeah, and even and I guess the last thing I'll say about it was even coming back here, like I tried to get out of here as soon as I could. And I just for reasons beyond my control and to some degree I had to stay here. And I'm here now.
All right.
Fortunately or
Go
unfortunately.
Bills. Go Josh Allen. He carries us. 27-year-old
Sure.
kid has got his our emotions on his on his shoulders, right? So let's go. Let's go team.
Your thing, go Bills, yeah.
All right, man. Let's talk again soon. Thanks for the chat. I
Okay.
appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.